Anyway, after he got two strikes on me, Crosetti gave me the hit and run. So I just happened to pull the ball, and the shortstop ran to cover the bag. I hit it right to the second baseman, but at least we got the runner over.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about.
Well, that's what he told me. He said, Dooley, I said, that's one thing about it. If we have trouble with you laying a bunt down, then you'll normally make contact.
Was there one game, I know it wasn't your start, but was there one game that stands out in your mind as your best game or maybe the biggest thrill you had or something in the majors?
Oh, the biggest thrill was winning the game in Mantle's 500th home run.
Oh, boy, I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that has to be.
Oh, I was tickled to death that day. It was against Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
And I came in the top of the sixth, and the first guy I faced was Frank Robinson, and he got a double off of me. And now I'm trying to recall this just, yeah, because, no, it wasn't the first guy I was faced. It was later in the game because I got a picture that I'm going to put in my collection in my office downtown that Frank is touching home plate as I'm catching the ball from Elston. And we're putting a tag on Frank, but he's safe. But what happened is I gave up that one run. And Mantle, what happened was Robinson was on second. We had like one out, ground ball in the infield. They threw to first. Robinson rounded third, and he made a fake to home. And I yelled to Mick, home. And Mick, when he came off the bag, you know, he'd had that shoulder operation. He sort of short-armed the ball, and he missed Elston by, I'll say, 5 or 10 feet.
Oh, boy.
And it went all the way to the screen. Well, Elston went after it, and that's when we had that, you know, it was fairly close play at home because he came in standing up instead of sliding. But anyway, after Mantle hit his home run, he came in the dugout, and he went over in the corner, and he said, finally, it's over. Well, I got so wrapped up in it that when I started out for the next inning, my stomach did a flip-flop. You know, you mentally get involved in the excitement of his 500th home run.
Right.
But then all of a sudden it hit me, you so-and-so, you better get your act together because now you got to go get them out.
Yeah. Have to think about yourself again.
That's right. So anyway, we got them out, and after the game, I was one of the last ones in the dugout, and Mantle, Brent, he came over to me, and he shook my hand and he said, Dooley, he said, I just want to thank you for the opportunity of giving me the opportunity to celebrate my 500th with a win.
Yeah, that's nice.
And those are things that I'll remember.
Oh, yes, forever.
For years and years to come.
In 67, you had a string of scoreless innings, 26 or 28, something like that. You must have been pretty doggone effective in there for quite a while. It must have been over, what, 10 or 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
Were you doing anything different, or was just everything going right?
No. In other words, putting the ball where you want it. Sinker was working loose. This is where Houck was such an effective manager. I don't know if that was in the first of the year or after the year. I just remember halfway in there after the All-Star break, I came in, Baltimore's beating us 1-0 in the stadium. Houck brings me in to sort of hold them down in the top of the ninth, give us a shot at it in the bottom of the ninth. Well, before the smoke is all over, we're losing 5-0. And Hauk comes running to the mound, and he says, "Man," he says, "you're like a coiled spring. If I cut the rope, you'd spring your ass right out of this stadium." I mean, people wonder what the manager says. And man, I mean, he laid it on me. And he said, "I want you to throw that ball right down the middle of the plate and let him hit the ball out of this ballpark." I said, "Okay." So I did. I threw the ball down the middle of the plate to Kurt Bleffrey, and he hit a dunker over short, which in Yankee Stadium and the old Death Valley, you had to shade to favor that. Well, it was a double. Mm-hmm. Anyway, before it was all over, and I threw Frank Robinson down the middle, and he hit a home run in the elevator shaft. It went straight up. He threw his bat and almost threw it into the stands. And so, Ellie pulled that ball in. But anyway, before the inning was over, they had scored four. And after the game, Hauk came up to me and he said, "Dooley," he said, "you having any personal problems?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "I had been married before I got to the big leagues. And then I was married my second time. Well, my first wife was after me because, you know, they think you're rich when you got there." But anyway, he asked me all those questions, and I said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, something's bothering you, and I want you to tell me." And I said, "Well, Skipper, the only thing that's bothering me is, and it's in the back of my mind today, was I want to have a second half like the first." Well, see, I think I'd saved 9-1-4. Earned run average was way down in the low twos. I mean, I was really cruising. And he said, "If that's all your problem, I want you to go home tonight, have a couple Bloody Marys, eat a big steak." The way he put it now, you might don't want to write this, but take a good shit and come out and play all of our nights.
I'll rephrase it a little bit.
Hey, I loved it. I loved it. And so I did. I went home. I did exactly what he said. The next day I came out. I went out through one pitch. Got the team out the next night. We won the ball game. I mean, that's why I'm saying it's all psychological. That's why this smokes with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go out and get a damn psychologist or a sportsologist or whatever to talk to this kid. Hell, all Cox is not a pitcher, but all the pitching coach has to do is just get into his head and give him confidence.
Yeah. Boy down there, the pitching coach whose name escapes me right now, has evidently...
Malzone.
Mazzoni, yeah.
I've never heard of him.
I hadn't either, but he's evidently, with everybody but Schmoltz, he seems to have worked wonders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Gavin,
the kid?
Well, all of these kids that they're bringing up now they all stayed healthy this year.
That's a big help.
They all stayed healthy. And just think, they got rid of two pitchers here to get Balecki and Berryhill. But I'm looking for next year. Shoot, like they're saying the other night on TV, they could have three Cy Young possibilities next year.
Sure. Darn right they could. They're going to have one this year. I don't think Glavin can help but win it this year.
Right.
Avery and Schmoltz and Lee Brandt, even at his age, has done, for a period of about 2 months, he was the best pitcher in the game.
There you go.
I've got a son who is a diehard Dodger fan, who's not real happy with the turn of events, but I'm sure glad to see it.
Well, I think it does baseball good, just like Minnesota went from last to first.
Right.
The Braves last to first. Now the Pirates are back in it. A lot of people said that's a surprise because of the turmoil in spring training and all. But I just look at it, it's a case of the team pulling together.
Yes.
Plus Bonds, Bonilla, they're all on that last year of those big contracts. Now the opportunity... Well, I say last year. I think they're all talking about free agencies and all.
I think so.
So, hey, here's their opportunity. Now, if they go out and win the World Series, which I hope they don't, because I'd like to see Atlanta do it, but because I think it would just be healthy for baseball.
I think so, too.
But, hey, these guys have to think of these things before they, you know, before they go out and pull boners, in other words.
Yeah, I think if the Pirates don't do it this year, I think it's going to be a long time before they get a chance to try it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering if they're going to keep these two guys, because the Pirates aren't known for money.
That's right. That's right. And if they do win it, what those two are going to want is going to be more than the national debt could handle.
And this is when you're going to bring the Mets, the Yankees, Atlanta may do it. Of course, what would they want to do with all that young talent they got there?
That's for sure.
L.A. So,
L.A.'s got the money to spend.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you mentioned here in just a second ago, Leo DeRocher's death. And that brought up a question I wasn't going to ask you, but I will. I just wrote a book. It'll be out next spring, called The Case For, about players overlooked that should be in the Hall of Fame. DeRocher was one of them. Mel Stottlemyre was one of them. What do you think? Does he belong in the Hall of Fame?
Mel Stottlemyre was one heck of a pitcher. We knew, being on the team with him, that if he got past the second or third inning, we could go eat a pizza. That's right. I mean, he was steady, that if we could score him a few runs, he'd hold the other team down, and we would... if you did any work in his behalf, it would have been in maybe in the ninth inning. He may run out of steam, or if he got a run or two behind and they had to pinch hit in the seventh or something, seventh or eighth inning. But other than that, he was steady.
Mm-hmm. Which may be part of the problem. He wasn't flashy in anything he did.
No, right. I mean, he just Houck knew when he put him on the mound that he was going to battle them. And by the way, what was his earned run average? See, that's something I've never even talked about with anyone.
297 for his career.
Career 297.
Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of fellas better than that.
Mm-mm. And especially with a ball club that finished like we did. It's like I tell people, you know, when you finish my rookie year, we went 10th. And then my second year was 9th. And my third year was 5th. I said, you know, that doesn't give you too many opportunities to win ball games.
Yeah.
I was told that I figured in on about 31 or 32% of our wins in 67 with saves and wins.
Yeah, I had that. You had 23 saves and wins, and the team, I think the team won 72, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you were just, you're about 31. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a amazing percent, actually.
And, see, we were a type of ball club, Brent, that if you gave up one run in the late innings, you lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, both of you and Stottlemyre were there at probably the worst time in the Yankees' history. Of course, of late's not too hot either, but you guys had just been a great team. And mm-hmm. The time that you fellows were there, they were, you weren't an ordinary team, you were a bad team.
Well, this is why a lot of writers have, you know, they've said, Dooley, if you were with any other team, you'd be a shoo-in for the saves and so forth.
Sure.
But then I look at it and say, hey, if the Yankees hadn't have been in such bad array at that point, I may never have gotten a chance.
Well, that may be a way to look at it, but when your earned run average is below 2.5, you're going to get a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And you saved 25% of the team's wins, and saves were a little bit more difficult to come by back then than they are now.
You had to face the winning or tying run.
Right.
Or they had to be on base.
Yeah, it was today, you can get a save at the drop of a hat. You couldn't do it then. If you had been on a team that was a contender, you'd have, if not led the league in saves, you'd have been right there as it was. You were third, I believe, weren't you, that year?
Mm-hmm. I think I was.
Yeah.
Well, I told, you know, something that you, Johnny Keene is the one that gave me my shot. And he was fired.
Mm-hmm.
The team was out in Anaheim. And, you know, occasionally on the road, you get one team, one game you're next to someone, next game you're, you know, someone else. Anyway, I just happened to be locker and next to Mantle there in Anaheim. And being a rookie, we just got the word in the clubhouse. And I looked at Mantle and I said, the guy started lining up at Keene's door. And I looked at Mantle and I said, Mick, I said, what do you say? He said, hell, Dooley, I don't know. This never happened since I've been here. So Mantle, I was last. And I went in the room because you just don't know what to say.
Of course not.
And I walked in and I said, Skipper, I'm sorry to hear what happened. I said, but I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to pitch here. He said, Dooley, let me tell you something. If you weren't good enough to be here, you wouldn't be here. You go out and continue to pitch like you're pitching, and you're going to do well. I came out of that room, he picked me up instead of me picking him up. That was the kind of man he was. And then I heard, you know, when he passed away about a year or so later, that he probably died of a broken heart.
I don't think he got the chance he should have been given.
Right. Well, the ball club was injured.
Yes.
There were Mantle, I think, what, his foot got caught under a fence, and
well, the ball club had gotten old.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ford and Mantle, I mean, these weren't kids anymore.
Yeah. Well, I know we used to, Peterson and I would, we'd go out and we'd, when we first got there as rookies and we just happened to run into Mantle or whatever, and, you know, we'd be pumping Mick up and say, Mick, you're going to hit about 40 this year. And he said, you guys are about 10 years too late.
That's about right, too.
Yeah. He was one hell of a guy.
Yeah, with sound legs, there's no telling what he would have done.
Well, now, we said that. We told him that. He said if he had sound legs, he may have never played baseball.
Football?
Well, he doesn't know.
Oh.
He said, I may have never been an athlete.
Huh.
So, you know, he takes that as, I don't want this to be a an excuse.
Well, he's never used it. Everybody else has.
Hmm? That's right.
He's never said a word about it.
Well, the only thing that if you know where I am now and all, like I say, hindsight's 20/20. Had I known this, I would have probably have ridden Mantle hard to get in shape, stay in shape.
Mm-hmm.
See, Mantle didn't do that much running before the game. He would go out and maybe jog from first base to maybe second or a little bit beyond that, just to loosen up a little bit. But, I mean, now with people, I drive them. You know, it's something that you just wouldn't do with Mickey Mantle.
Well, some people take it and some people don't, though.
Mm-hmm. He would have taken it.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, because I remember one night in Detroit when his hamstring popped, and I mean, it sounded like a 22. And he, I mean, you saw him bounce that ball back to the mound, and he broke out of that box from the left side, and I said, my God, that man, when he was younger, look what he could have done. Well, I heard he could get down the first, what, 3-4?
I thought it was 3-1.
Well, I knew it was 3-something.
Something unbelievable.
It was real. Yeah. I mean, that's like, hey, man, he's there. But I saw that flash, and then all of a sudden he pulled up lame. He came straight in the dugout, went straight in, showered, hit a plane, and took off for Dallas.
Well, I guess he knew what was going on.
Oh, yeah. And see, and then you're just without him.
Yeah.
For a couple of weeks, and then he'll come back. And it was just the charisma of being around the guy.
Yeah, I bet it was. A lot of fellas have said he had a presence that most people didn't have.
That's right.
One fellow told me, He was a little before his time. J.W. Porter was a catcher in the American League in the 50s, early 50s, mid 50s. Said in 1956, Mickey Mantle was the best player ever played the game.
I believe it.
I think that was a Triple Crown year, but he said that there was. If he didn't want to, I don't think he could have gotten him out that year, he said.
That's right.
Phenomenal.
Would you figure the speed, the contact, you know, being able to roam the outfield, that's... But it was just the opportunity to be on the same ball club with him.
Yeah, I bet that's got to be a thrilling thing to do. There's very few players that have been like him, maybe Mays or something like that, but there's been very few.
Right. I was wondering the other night, right now as we talk, what would a Mantle, a Mays, an Aaron now?
Oh, you couldn't pay him now.
That's right. I mean, because if these guys can demand $5 and $6 million a year, and their attitude toward the game is so much different, it'd take the National Bank probably to find these guys.
The local team here is the Reds. I'm in Lexington, about 70 miles away, and see Eric Davis, and he's getting $3 or $3.5 million.
Boy, did he have a disappointing year.
That's all he's ever had, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, goodness gracious, if he's getting paid on what people think he ought to do, and he's never been paid on what he has done.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can get that kind of money, you've got to think what Mays or Mantle would get.
That's right.
And it would have to be $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
They did produce. They just think Davis ought to produce. That's a subject I don't want to get on to get very, very outspoken and frustrated on that.
I know where you're coming from.
Back at the start of this, I told you about an increase in fan mail, and you gave a great positive response. Do you get much fan mail?
It comes in spurts. I average a couple a week, and I try to order. Some of the strange requests I haven't answered. I got back in June, and that's unusual for me. They want me to send a canceled check.
Now, I just talked to another fellow who got that request.
And it worries me because, you know, it's got my checking account number, and I don't think the guy sends me Gaylord Perry, $192 check he paid to Southern Bell, you know. I'm skeptical.
The magazine that this interview will appear in is called Sports Collector's Digest, and it's geared to just that, baseball card collectors and things like that.
Right.
And it's just jillions of ads in there. We'll send you a couple copies when it comes out, but look through the ads, and there's almost every issue. There are some ads, you know, not the whole ad, but part of the ad will have somebody's canceled checks for sale. And this is a phenomenon that I do not understand at all.
Mm-hmm.
Autograph picture, sure. Autograph ball, I'm not too keen on the idea of selling these things, but that's up to somebody else to decide. But still, that I can understand, but why would anybody want somebody's canceled check?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only reason I haven't answered that, because I normally try to get my mail. I sit down when I get it, read it, do it, and put it right back in the mail.
Mm-hmm. That's
because
good.
It's just like I had a guy call me from California, and he said, Dooley, he said, I've got your rookie card with Bobby Mercer on it. If I send it to you, will you autograph it? And I said, yeah. As long as that envelope's there, I'll put it right back in the mail. You should get it on return mail from coast to coast.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, have you got a second to talk to me? And I said, sure. So, he said, being here in San Francisco, he said, now, you know, Frank Robinson is, and I'm going back a few years, he said, Frank is our manager out here, and he said, I happened to catch him one day, and he said, I asked him, Frank, who was the toughest pitcher on you. And he said, Dooley, you may be surprised. He said, it was a fairly unknown pitcher by the name of Dooley Womack.
Okay.
And I told the guy, I said, no, that wouldn't surprise me because I faced him approximately 17 times, give or take, struck him out 12.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he hated me. I mean, he, you know, we were friends. But when you went between the lines, it was Frank against Dooley.
Sure.
And Kurt Bleffrey rode that. See, I knew Kurt from the Yankees years ago. And anyway, he made that. He got a hold of Frank, and we were down in spring training. And I'm on the third base line, you know, catching in the box from the outfield. And Kurt said, hey, Frank, here's the guy that's sticking that bat up your rear. He gave him a hard time, and he said, hey, Frank, what did it cost you in income with this guy stuffing you? And Frank said, at least 10 grand. And I said, well, Jesus, that's a lot more than I made. Oh, man. But that's a... you know, being able to joke a little bit, but of course, when the game starts, the joking stops.
Sure. Well, you got to be friends. You're obviously competitors.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no reason to carry it beyond the game.
Right.
Would you go back and be a ball player again?
In a skinny minute.
Good.
I'm 52, and if this shoulder, I weigh 164 right now.
Well, you're lighter than when you played.
I was between 165 and 170, and I've been sort of lifting light weights to keep from the stomach going down into the drawers. And just, you know, physically, well, my doctor told me that if I didn't work out, I was going, my cholesterol was going to kill me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was 235 when I started my workout.
Oh, my goodness.
And, but anyway, it's what you eat and all. But I'd go back in a skinny minute to be able to, you know, perform again.
Do you have any regrets from your career? Obviously, the injury is one, but other than that?
That's the biggest one. Everything else is pluses. Just like Bouton asked me my rookie year, he said, what has baseball done for you? And I said, Jim, I cannot put a dollar figure on my rookie year in baseball, in the show.
Great.
I said, from the friends I've made across the country, the people I've met and everything, if I went to California, I could call some people and say, look, I'm here in California, need a place to stay. Wherever I might go. And he said, but you're not making any money. I said, but I still can't put a dollar sign on it.
Mm-hmm. It's different today.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, it's a business now. When I read the papers that so-and-so has filed bankruptcy and this, that, and the other, I am awed. And I know bad luck hits people.
Yeah.
But not when you're making hundreds of thousands.
It's going to hit awful hard when you're making $1 million a year.
That's right. That, when Gaylord Perry filed for bankruptcy, that was the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
Uh-huh.
All the money he made. What did he do with it?
It's hard to imagine.
Bad management.
I heard a tale about him. I don't know if it's true or not, but at the Hall of Fame inductions, mm-hmm. he set up a table on the streets and was charging people passing by the streets for his autograph.
I wouldn't doubt it. You knew he was coaching at Limestone.
Right.
Okay. They have what they call a recruiting coordinator. Well, he came to a bunch of our games this summer, and the Legion team,
mm-hmm.
and he told us, he said, Gaylord was hard to get along with, and when they passed him over the year before, he was almost unbearable.
Hmm.
But when he made it, forget it. he was worse.
Oh, no.
I got the biggest kick out of that. Well, he showed his behind, Brent, when we went to an old-timers day up here in Greenville, South Carolina, and we played against the old the mill hands. In other words, these are the guys that played for the mill team back years ago. And I knew we had a catcher there that was between 60 and 70 years old.
Oh, my.
21. And I knew what I had caught years ago, and I said, I will be behind the plate probably before the first inning's over. So Gaylord's getting ready to loosen up, and I said, Gaylord, you want me to catch you? Hell no. Get out of the way. The bat boy's going to catch me.
Oh, no.
I should have said, well, you know, you must not be going to throw anything then. But I didn't. I just walked away from him, and they put me at second base. And he pitched the first inning, and then I went behind the plate for the next four innings. But just that kind of attitude. Everybody else was happy-go-lucky, get along. Old Marv Thornberry at first. I had to go over and cover first base because he was chatting with the umpire. Ground ball in the infield.
That's the way it ought to be. What the heck?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, things like that, it's for everybody to enjoy. Just not the ball players, the fans, everybody.
Yeah, well, when I was behind the plate, and like I said, my arm, there's not much left of it. And so what I did is I kept watching the guy on first base. Every time that I caught the ball, he'd drop his head and walk back to first. So I just happened to catch one. When he dropped his head, I flipped it underhanded. And it was one of those that went up light tower high to get the first. And Marv put the tag on the guy. And we just laughed about it. Tagged the guy out.
Embarrassing.